The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, as we do every Monday between 2 to 3, where we discuss education, Chinuch. We discuss how to improve ourselves, how to make the world a better place, how to be the people we want to be in the place we want to be, and everything in between. How to influence our families, our friends, our communities, and just go in the right direction that we want to go into. So, today we actually have a very interesting topic to discuss, and we're going to be discussing quite a bit of the educational, remedial, special needs combined with some therapy, trauma, and putting it all together through art. Next week, next Monday actually, is going to be the Live Creative Day. And when we talk about Live Creative Day, it definitely need a look at where the creativity comes into our lives and how it affects us in every way. So I'm going to be speaking today to Sandra Grief. Sandra Grief is a remedial therapist, educator. She did trauma counselor, debriefer, etc., who's done her journey in these areas and somehow was led, which we're going to hear from her, led into the arts, into the creative area, and is qualifying as a art therapist here in South Africa, one of the first group of art therapists here in South Africa. I think there's about 10 of them. So we're going to get into that chat. Anything you'd like to ask about what we're talking about art therapy, about the journey, about the creativity, about where that comes into our lives? Are we even creative anymore in our state and age in this generation? 34519 is the SMS line. Or Telegram, 061-895-1019. So as I said, Telegram, 061-895-1019, or SMS 34519. Anything you'd like to ask, share, comment, or just wonder anything here, me or Sandra, you're welcome to send in your messages. Good afternoon, Sandra. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Good afternoon, Rabbi G. It's lovely to be here again.
Okay, yeah. Yes. Likewise. So it's the first time on our show, but you've been here quite some time ago, about a year ago. So let's go and dive into a bit of the discussion. Just first tell us a bit about yourself. Mm-hmm. You are a remedial therapist.
Yes.
Right? Okay. And Take me from there.
I'm a remedial therapist working with children, special needs children, probably specializing more with children with autism spectrum disorders, working in a remedial school in Kensington for many years, and always run an art group. I've always had to have the art and the creative side of whatever I've needed so that I could actually link with the children. Because a lot of the time the children are battle with their verbal, with their emotional. I'm also working at the School of the Deaf at the moment at St. Vincent's. Okay. So I'm there now also doing remedial therapy, but using a lot of the visual to help the children understand language. So I'm using art to help them understand how language fits in and how they can read and process using art.
Amazing. So you are an art teacher as well, an art teacher for many years, and now you're coming to put the two together in link.
Yes.
Okay. What role does art have in our lives generally today?
Sure.
Before we dive into that.
I think art is, it's a saving grace, honestly. It's a space where we can tap. It's ancient. It's been around for years. And I don't think we are creative enough. We in our homes, we can cook, we can bake, we can work in the garden, but we don't realize how important art is in those settings. And the problem is the youngsters today aren't in the gardens. They're not helping mom in the kitchen anymore. Very few are. They are on their devices. They can be creative on their devices, but they're not communicating. And I'm finding that is such a loss.
What is the difference between being creative on your device, which I'm not really sure what that would be, unless that would be some kind of app of drawing and art. But what is the difference between old school art and device electric art?
Well, a very big difference. First of all, the physicality of holding a pen and working with materiality and working with products that, that bring up emotion. When you're on an iPad, you can work with your finger and that's it. You don't have anything that you're holding. And you don't have that auditory. When you're working with a pen or a pencil, there's an amazing graphite sort of sound when you're scratching a surface. When you're working with paint, it slushes and it gurgles. And when you're mixing it, it slops. And that encourages your creativity and also your emotions sort of get triggered. And you kind of connect with that. And I just think that's sometimes.
And the importance of the creativity in our lives and how it affects our emotions?
I would say very much so. It connects us to our emotions. Like I said, with that auditory sound, with that vestibular activity of using a pencil, using a pen, using a paintbrush that's softer, it kind of triggers something in our innate beings, in our deep down in our guts.
So you're talking about bringing all our senses together
100%.
In order to get this reaction that we will have that will connect us and ground us and bring us closer to our emotions.
Yeah.
And when we have that sensory grounding per se, would that be used as a grounding in general or you would use it more for the therapy or for the, you know, you come from a world on one hand of education and the other hand you've done all the trauma therapies. Where would you link it in?
I would probably link it in, I link art and I link it with everything. It's a part of my life. It's a part of my personal being. So I work all the time. If I'm feeling a bit rattled, I will sit and I'll scribble and I'll work. And I do think that it's a wonderful skill to teach children to actually use that to connect, to ground themselves, to hold themselves up. Think about how you would work with an iPad. You would slop. Your body would be a different posture. You can lie on the bed. But when you're working with art materials, you've got to hold your body up. You've got to hold your core muscles. You've got to be active. You've got to be present. You've got to be grounded. Your feet have got to be on the floor so that you can hold and move your whole body around the process that you're working with. If you're working with clay, you've got to slap it down on the table and you need all this force. So it's really grounding because it kind of forces you to connect with your body, but also to the piece of paper and also to put whatever you're feeling onto that paper and taking out what's internally in our internal minds onto the external. When we externalize our stuff, then it kind of can be worked with and it can be looked at. And
so we'll get to that shortly, to the internal and external part of things. At this point, what you're describing is a skill, even before we even look into the remedial therapy or the trauma or the debrief or the grief therapy that you know, that's your area of profession, just a tool for parents to spend time with their kids and to bring into your homes as grounding your children. What happened to us? Where did we get lost on the journey of that, considering that, you know, in the past that's what we had and that was kind of the grounding thing? Why did we let go of it so easily? I'm going to give you time to think about it because we do need to take a short ad break. And when we come back, we're going to go and dive directly into this discussion.
Thank you.
The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chatham Chai Chinuch for Rabbi G. We are back. I'm here in a just beginning, I'd say, conversation here with Sandra Grief. Sandra is a remedial therapist on the one side and together with being a grief counselor and the other side, and in between found time to connect through art and bring art therapy into her work. And we're just discussing first the beginning of art and where the importance, and right before the break you mentioned how important art is coming, just even before we look at the actual art, just the need to get all our senses in tune and lined with it regarding how we sit, how we hold our crayons, our pen. Do we still have crayons in this gen? Yeah, we do. Okay. And all that ability to bring ourselves physically into this art part. And we spoke about the fact that it's kind of been lost in our day-to-day life. Why? What happened?
It's actually quite sad when you think about it. I think because of technology, I think technology is great. I love technology. As a remedial therapist, we've got apps that we can use with children with reading difficulties, and it's all great and all, but at the end of the day, it kind of dislodges us and disconnects the adults and the children. So the children are also watching their parents on their devices. It's not just, it's something that, I think parents have also got to be very mindful of, and, you know, remember that in the old days, the traditional ways are still very, very, very important and sacred and useful. You know, I'm Italian. That's my origin. I make lasagna. I make gnocchi. And I just think that's such an amazing place to sit in the kitchen. My son is also, quite a good cook. We spent a lot of time in the kitchen. We're making dough and making things. And I just think it's a quick, easy society where things are,
And you said very well, I mean, we spend a lot of time.
Yeah.
Is it because we don't have time today?
We don't have time. We don't have time because everything's just, it takes too long to cook. We're in a quick fix society. We'll rather go buy pre-made, ready-made stuff, which is great. But what it does is that slowing process is so sacred. It's so important to be slow and to slow children down. And they don't see slow. They just see quick, quick, fast, fast, finish, finish. And a lot of children really battle. They need to be slowed down. So
would art in the kitchen or on paper or whatever it is bring more patience to a child and the ability to focus in detail and to stay focused for longer?
Yes, definitely. That's one of my main stances is to build up the concentration. As a remedial therapist, little ones and children really battle to stay focused. But if I can get their attention onto an old-fashioned piece of paper with a pen and a pencil and some crayons, like you said, and some paintbrushes, and I can stretch that concentration, what am I doing? I'm getting them to sit longer. I'm getting them to focus. And I'm training the brain to actually contain and to be present. For me, it's about being present in the moment. That's what art is about. It's about that presence.
That presence. Mm. And we're talking about a tool that will bring in the sensory modulation, the physical holding of a child, the listening even to the sound and the voice and the brush and the auditory processing and everything comes in, to as well as the patience and the strength. And perhaps maybe instead of asking why we lost it, it's just a good reminder for us to say, hey, we have this amazing tool.
Wow.
Let's see what we can use in order to bring this tool and this creativity into our life. The more we use in the device or the more we follow other people or watch, we are losing that human connection and creativity. What happens to our emotions, feelings, and our inner self once it's brought out to the world on paper, in a, you know, in an arts manner, even in a dish, or you're Italian, I'm sure you can do it that way.
Yes.
So what happens in the way we can process our emotions?
Okay, so in a therapeutic space, you'll be working on your therapeutic relationship with your client and creating a safe enough, good enough space where your client or the pupil that you're working with feels that they can trust you with their artwork. Because remember, there's a lot of time and effort and there's a lot of also judgment around artworks. People.
What do you mean?
I'm just saying, you know, when children produce art in a classroom, they're all competed on a wall and everyone has to have a look at them and, oh, that one, oh, look at Johnny's art. That's really beautiful. And maybe there's no comment about their art. So art also can be quite stressful because once something is on paper, children are worried that it could be judged. So the art therapist has to contain and hold that in such a way that the child feels safe to put their stuff on paper and then what to do with it afterwards.
You know, you're bringing up a fascinating point that perhaps, I don't know, I didn't even look at it in this way, meaning you're saying that we're using art today as a very end goal orientated thing and how it's going to be judged and perceived and seen, and we don't enjoy the journey of art. What would happen if we will try take this journey of art and decide that we can draw something beautiful on paper and then not necessarily hang it on the fridge or put it in the bin or get rid of it?
Yes.
Would that be a challenge because the child or the person feels connected to the art, or can we actually learn how to enjoy the journey?
For me, it's about the process. So art therapy is about the actual process, not really the end product. So sometimes the end product is quite different to how a child will process. I also like to work with sand and kinetic sand because it moves, and because at the end of the day, you're going to have to pack it away. You can take photographs of your art and keep it in that way. But
you sound like an art therapist who's trapped in an OT's soul.
Yes. Kind of, well, I've got that. Well, I think our modalities are definitely linked up. And we are on the same, with the HPCSA, we actually fall under OT.
Okay, so yes, there is
do.
That.
Yes,
so you do
is.
Use
well
obviously
done, yeah.
the sensory concept and everything where it comes into,
yes.
into play.
Yes.
So we definitely need that space. Can you give me an example or an experience of something that you've had of a child or an adult who couldn't express or couldn't share, and through art they were able to bring their inner side out and deal with it?
Sometimes you don't have to produce anything, and sometimes it's just about sitting with someone and holding you in that space where you don't want to perform. And for me, I've had clients that sometimes don't want to do art because it's a performance anxiety thing. And then we'll talk in metaphors, and we'll talk about, well, let's just take this into our heads and we'll just imagine. Let's create an imaginary world in our heads, or we'll look outside of my window and there might be a garden outside, and I'll say, can you see something out there? Can you see some images in the trees? Can you see a face? Can you look at the clouds? Can you see anything up there? So sometimes it doesn't have to be a piece of paper. It doesn't have to be an object. It can actually just be what you can use. We can use this wall over here, and we can.
So you're looking at the, you know, the old school therapy 100%. In a way, just with a mediator in between. So
yes.
It could be the piece of paper. That's
yes.
the mediator. When the, you know, the client doesn't feel comfortable to talk directly, or it could be the sun outside or the
yes.
garden or something.
Yes.
But is it general therapy with just a mediator in between to bring
yes.
the trust and connection together?
Well, we call it triangulation. So it's the therapist. There's a relationship between the therapist, the client, and the art material and the paper or something that is outside. It's a third thing. So that triangulation creates that space where there's a relationship with the client and the artwork, with the client and the therapist, and then the therapist with the artwork, and looking at the therapist and looking at everything that the client brings into the room. So it's this faceted
so
space.
You're using the you know the middle
yes.
ground of connection, but it's also a I wouldn't say masking, but you know, the analogy that comes into mind is my wife is one of the best, or the best probably, Snuzlan therapist I know in South Africa. Or,
wow.
And one of the things I've learned from her is when she will sit with a client who has a difficulty with eye mm-hmm. contact or to mm-hmm. open up directly, mm-hmm. they will use the mirror in the room, and she and the client would look at each other
wow.
through the mirror and get mm-hmm. that boundary. And what you're talking about is quite similar as well mm. to be able to put in that boundary.
Mm. Yes.
Okay. So let's take what you said now,
yes.
and I want you to give a short guideline to parents listening to us. So you have a mom in the car, and you're talking about an amazing thing, because many times the mom will come and tell me, well, my child came home from school, and I told her or him, how was your day? And they said, fine. Okay. Great. They don't have that direct connection.
Mm.
What would you recommend for them? To use as a art, you know, that third party in the relationship
yes.
to create a parent-child relationship.
Connection, yeah. I would make sure that or allow the parent to create a space for there to be some kind of creativity and some kind of quietness in that time with their child. So the TV is off, the devices are turned off. So there's no other.
I didn't even know devices have that function.
They have to be turned off. Yes,
okay.
they have to be turned off.
Okay.
So that we're talking to each other, because a lot of the time with little ones, and that's my specialization, the little ones cannot find the correct language to express themselves. So instead of saying, how was your day? They're going to say, fine, because a lot's happened in that day. But maybe show me how your day, what did your day look like? Let's go and look for something in the kitchen. Show me with the spices. What did your day look like? Show me what color spices. Show me how your day went. Were they the red spices? Was it a salty day? Was it a pepper day? So there's a kitchen scenario where I can do, I can just make up a story, or you can go into the garden. Doesn't have to be in a traditional space of pens and pencils. It can just be, so tell me about the, look at the, it's spring now. So what color reminds you of your day today? Was it a, were the buds blooming or weren't they blooming? Was it a hard day? Were the buds nice and tight or were they, was everything blossoming? Was
so anything in the world basically in the use world, as you an use engaging.
100%.
Okay.
Driving in the car, look out the window. What do you see?
Okay. Let's take a quick jump to your other professional side,
yes,
which is the trauma and yes, the debrief. And, you know, you've worked in the police station,
yes,
for quite some time.
Yes.
And, you know, these are people that have suffered real trauma and, mm, and real challenges.
Mm.
How would you bring the art into engaging with them?
First of all, when anybody is in trauma, the one thing they cannot do is speak. Verbal is difficult. It's difficult to explain what happened to you, but you can maybe use color, or I usually make sure I've got charcoal pens and pencils and in the room, because there's something about that sound of the charcoal. I always go to the auditory and the mess of the charcoal, because the client can actually mess and their hands get messy and they can move the art and the art can change. So I make sure that that's in the room, that there is that, because talking about it is too stressful. So what it does is it creates a space for the nonverbal to be very, very pronounced in that space. So I don't push talking about it. In fact, with trauma debriefing, we don't trauma debrief. We wait a while because it takes such a long time to assimilate and to work through the system. And when the person is ready, they will be ready, and it has to be the most gentle process of getting something onto a piece of paper or a wall or a canvas so that it can be held and kept, usually in the therapy space. It's very unusual when I worked at the police station where the children wanted to take their artworks home. They wanted to leave it at the police station with me where I could protect it and it can be kept in that space.
Because they felt it was a safe holding place for it and leave that.
They didn't want to take
it
home.
Behind.
They didn't want to take it home. And usually there was a process that I developed. I will write a paper on it because it was so profound for me. And this is why that's where my journey started. I worked with a 2-year-old who had no language at all. And I had to trauma debrief her. I went to the house. And she could only show me in shapes and colors. And her helper actually related the trauma back to her favorite program. And something happened in the program. And she related what happened in the situation to a little thing, a scribble on the page. And the helper figured it out because she was with the child. And I just thought, this is amazing. This child has got no language. And she explained something and gave it to me. And I had to hold it and keep it. And the relief from that little girl was so
amazing.
That she could actually tell me what happened without language.
Which is unbelievable.
Yes.
And taking that to our non-professional lives.
Yes.
When you do meet a friend who went through trauma,
yes,
and you know, you're kind of walking this fine line, mm, of wanting to show your friend that you're there for them and you care, yeah, and you're involved and you're engaging with them. At the same time, you don't want to invade their privacy and, mm, you don't want them to talk when they're not ready and you don't want to push them. How would you use, for just an ordinary person who's, mm, not necessarily artistic, how would you use in what format per se, mm, you know, the things around you in order to create that feeling and engaging with the client or with your friend, sorry.
Well, first of all, the friend would want to actually, if they would like to share with you, just to listen. I think a lot of the time therapists, the most important job is just to listen and just to witness and to hear. And every time you tell the story, you debrief yourself. So debriefing is about telling it again and again until it's done, until it needs to be not told anymore. And then maybe thought about in a few years' time or a few months' time. But for me, it's about just being present and listening and really listening and careful listening and sometimes not saying anything. You don't have to say anything.
Exactly.
For me, it's not about speaking. No.
But sometimes it's also the your friend doesn't want to talk.
No.
So what would you use around you
in? Well, why would you want to make someone tell the story? Because it could also be traumatizing to you. So there's something called secondary trauma. So when something is told, then you could be traumatized, or your creative brain is going to create even a, and if there's children around, and this is something that parents must be very conscious of, when they are talking to their friends about something that did happen, make sure the children are not in the room. They listen to everything, and you re-traumatize by retelling the story. And a child wasn't there. They don't understand it, but they pick up little pieces, and then they create it into something totally different. So for me, it's always about who's in the room. Look at the confidentiality and make sure that there are no children around. Little ones are nonverbal. That little girl heard, she understood everything. She was two. She still had that concept of understanding. So just be careful what you say in front of
children.
That's
a very challenging situation that we're at currently.
Yes.
Because due to the crime in our streets, I mean, kids are always around adults consistently.
Yes.
And adults, I don't know if I'm allowed to say, but adults are quite depressing today.
Yeah, overflow.
Completely, you know, always worried about crime and government and currency and what's the future and where are we going to be and what's going to happen.
Sure.
How do we protect our kids from all of that?
We've got to be mindful of our language. We've got to be mindful of what we share with them. We've got to be mindful of our conversations on the phone. We've got to watch what we say.
Be aware of who's listening to
you. Little Bubba sitting in the back seat while you carrying on, is hearing every single word you're saying. It's going into their minds, and they are creating, especially if they're nonverbal. Remember, they've got a creative part of their brain that is creating this fantastical, very scary version of what you've just said. So for me, it's about being mindful. Hold the conversation. Have it quietly, privately, at home, quietly. Go outside. Make sure that the children aren't listening, because you're re-traumatizing by retelling stuff that they don't really need to know about. They don't know how to process it. It's too difficult.
And basically, you're talking about focus completely on being a listener and realize that somebody else is listening to you as well.
Yes.
Okay, let's go look into the more judgmental side of art right after the short break that we take, and we'll get into there. In the meantime, any questions you have, if you'd like to ask Sandra, who is a remedial therapist, a trauma counselor, and as well as becoming an art therapist and uses art consistently in her life. So 34519. Any questions, any comments, just send us an SMS, 34519, or Telegram 061-895-1019.
The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back. I'm here in a fascinating discussion. I'm here with Sandra Grief, who is a remedial therapist and trauma counselor who is taking the journey into art therapy. So I'm debating if to go with the questions that are coming in on SMS or the topic, but let's start the topic and we'll get to the questions shortly. Mm. In the meantime, anybody who wants to comment, ask 34519, you can, or Telegram 061-895-1019. I see the questions, I will ask, don't worry. So we spoke about enjoying the journey of art and connecting and the posture and how you hold yourself and how you're connected. Is that being affected by the emphasis we put on art and what it means when you do something? So if we're taught that this color, if you choose this color, you have a dark side to you, then this is light, this is this. Yeah. Are we putting too much pressure on people saying that they're kind of, well, I feel like drawing now, but then if I, you know, if I take the red color, what are you going to think of me? And if I take the black one, what are you going to think of me? And are we putting too much stress on the world, or is it really that important?
In art therapy, we don't put a judgment on any choices or colors, or we allow our clients to have the agency to choose what they're feeling. A lot of children will choose yellow as a sad color if they want to. It doesn't have to fit a format. And it's about the client and the child explaining why they've chosen that color. And I think that agency is so important. That is such an important thing where the therapist is not judging and saying, oh, this is a depressed child, they've used too much blue. Maybe that was the only color that they saw. Or maybe in my years of teaching, I've worked with children and sometimes children are colorblind and they don't, and the parents don't even know. So right. a child will pick with a color and they will think it's red and it's not red. It's actually a different, it's a brown. So it's also about just listening and saying, why did you choose that color? What does it look like? Do you listen to, again, listen to the child, listen to why they chose that. Is it the same color as a tree? Is that what you're connecting with? You might be very surprised at why they chose it and what they are feeling. Maybe they're feeling murky or maybe they, you know,
so you're saying it's time to stop analyzing art.
100%.
And whatever comes out is good and yes. It doesn't mean too much and don't overthink it. Just enjoy the journey.
Yes.
Okay. Beautiful. So one of the questions coming in that is not necessarily an art question, but I think it's a very important question.
Sure.
Hi, Rabbi G. Thank you so much for this so important, topic. Wow. How do I tell a adult that is asking things next to the children that this is not appropriate? I feel people don't even realize that there are kids around, but don't want to be rude.
I think it's something that we are teachers. We're all teaching each other. Children teach us all the time. And I think it is such a blessing for someone to say, let's just be calm and let's not discuss this. There are little ears. You are teaching someone. You're also helping them to become more conscious of their language. And I think it's a gift. It's not being rude. You're actually showing someone the ultimate respect. And the biggest thing for me, you're showing the child respect. And when children are shown respect, they respect in return. It's a mutualistic relationship.
100%. And people would react nice to it generally. Mm. However, I will say that you need to have your priorities correct. Mm. And you need to defend your kids more than defending the adult neighbor. Mm. And if it means by protecting your child that they won't create trauma, if it means being a bit rude to a friend that you could apologize afterwards or whatever it is, don't get confused. And sometimes we have this social peer pressure of doing what's right for our friends and connection, which we need to, but we need to have our priorities. And our priorities are kids need our protection much 100%. More than other adults. Even if it comes out uncomfortably and even if it means in a way a bit offensive, as well as obviously it generally won't get there. And if you do it appropriately and people can realize and understand the respect and the truth is it's a lesson for life. Not everything is appropriate for anybody at all times.
Mm, 100%.
So we definitely need to be on the guard for that and redirect. As you speak about art therapy and about listening to the person, I keep on hearing in the background the enabling therapist and the concept of allowing the therapist to be led by the client 100%. And not leading.
100%.
Is there room for art therapy that doesn't fall under enabling therapist, or it always goes down to the enabling therapist and to the place of listening and letting the client guide?
So we have two forms of art therapy. We've got directives and non-directives. So we would use directive therapy where we would lead in a group setting when we've got a limited time, when we want to have a goal that we need to work through. We will use a directive. We will lead. But
So you would lead directly and open up the topic and speak about
it? We will give a process. We will say, let's do a process. So we won't give a topic. We will use a process like show me, let's draw a biome for your favorite pet. Let's create an imaginary pet, a dinosaur. So let's create a world for you. So we're not directly saying where your safe spaces are. We're saying, let's create it for the animal. And then we can see what you need in your safe spaces. Is there shelter? Is there self-care? Is there food? Is there a place to hide? Is there a place to rest? So we can use a directive in such a gentle, beautiful manner that you're still holding grace.
So you're still enabling
in
the
a
client.
Way, yeah.
And it's still under that place of, you know, let's explore this and then
together.
See if the child is describing. What are the signs that you see in art? Like we all know as therapists that there are times that a client says something and you say, whoa, this is a red flag. I need a check. There's no violence. There's no challenges. Yeah. I need a report.
Yeah.
What can you see in art that, and I know we spoke about we don't analyze other people's stuff and we don't check, but what do we see that we have to look out for and say, whoa, something needs to be looked into and this child's not safe?
Okay. Interesting question. Wow. So we are reporters. We have to report if there is something that is not okay. And we explain our disclosure and our confidentiality, but we also have to be very clear with our client, even if they're little, they need to know that if something does come up where they are not safe, where I am not safe, where someone else is not safe, then we have to report. We are mandated reporters. I've done my internship at JPCCC and at SICAD, and I'm actually still at SICAD, just finishing off my internship now. And it's a very important thing that the client understands that if stuff is put into that space, that we have to. Legally, with the Constitution of South Africa, we have to.
But what are the stuff that will alert you?
The stuff that would alert us, it's something that we've just got to be mindful of, but the child has to tell us. There has to be some kind of, we can't just assume, we have to make sure that the child does lead that. And it's something that we have to investigate like anything. We've got to be cautious all the time. We are protectors. So we have to be cautious.
So there's nothing in the art, really. It's about the therapy and the communication,
yes,
and in the, and how you get to speak and see what comes
and
up.
And the more communication, the more you're going to unpack a story and a narrative, and you're going to get a full picture. So for me, it's not about jumping to conclusions. It's about holding. And just holding and containing and just being present and witnessing and reading what is happening in the space.
And but what you're saying is that in the actual art, mm-hmm, there's no real red flags. It's only what the content that the child brings into the discussion.
So what would be a red flag? What would you you've made the question. So what type of red flag would you? So color, something
so
sexual.
Color,
something
sexual,
yes.
Bowel, that their head was ripped off or whatever it is that these are analogies. Is that something that will alert you? Or every child is creative, and if
children
they feel like...
Children do that. Sometimes children want to take the Barbie's head off because she's angry, you know. And I think that is the safe space to do it in and not outside where you're going to hurt someone or hurt an animal. So that's the whole idea, is to create that non-shaming space also.
To allow it. It's a bit like floor time.
Yeah.
And in that area of space.
Yeah.
Okay, we do need to take our last break,
sure,
for today. And then when we come back, we're going to start wrapping up and getting towards,
sure,
the end of the show. A short break. We'll be right back.
The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Thora Bai G. We are here at the end of today's session, a discussion. Great, fascinating topic that we've been speaking. I'm here with Sandra Grief, who is a remedial therapist, trauma counselor, debriefer, and then bringing art into all of this as an art teacher and going into art therapy. And my question to you, after all these amazing things that you've done for the community and for your clients for many, many years, what is your message and your vision? Where do you want to see us as South Africans, as the community in 10 years from now? What is your vision going forward?
Wow. I've lived in Glen Hazel my whole life. So although I'm not Jewish.
Not yet.
My whole life, most of my life. I'll always
Until
be
that,
here.
Yeah.
I love Glen Hazel. And the one word that comes to mind for me is a Yiddish word, and it's chen. And I think we have to shine. We have to be examples. We have to shine. We've got to be protectors. We've got to glow, and we've got to lead away. If we're going to be negative and we are going to find fault, we will find fault in everything. When we walk in light, we create a light, and we create something for children to see, and we create light in darkness. And for me, it's about chen.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah, you said that made me surprised. No, amazing.
Yes, you didn't expect that, I remember.
Not at all. So fascinating. And really being that, living in that positive place,
yeah,
I think that's crucial for what we are and what we do, and being in that light, which could be quite difficult, these days.
Mm.
What would you say would be a tool to bring in this lightness? And I know we're kind of running out of time, but this lightness into your home as a general thing.
Candles, light a candle, have art. Have a little art corner in your space, in your house, just a little table with a couple of little tools where kids can just go and sit and be creative and connect with themselves again. connect with their bodies, relax that vestibular part of their brain when they're scratching. Put some, instead of, make some Play-Doh. Go Google a recipe. Have some Play-Doh in a corner in a Tupperware. Let the kids play. They're not playing enough. They need to shine. They can't shine looking at a flat screen.
And allowing it. And exactly what you're saying, there isn't, if we want our homes to be a home, happy homes and invest in it, we have to invest in it. 100%. It doesn't come on its own. It doesn't just happen. It's our job and our responsibility as parents, educators, leaders. That's what we need to do to create this uplifting light. And Chaim, as you said, Chaim. Perfectly. Amazing.
Thank you.
It's been a complete pleasure. Thank you so much, Sandra Gruy, for being with us today. Amazing, seeing people that are in the first group of art therapists in South Africa. We didn't even get to that. There's actually 10 of you.
Sub-Sahara Africa.
And amazing. I know years ago I worked with art therapists in Israel, and now seeing it finally come here and getting there, and you being out of the first group, I mean, you're creating the change you want to see, and that's really inspiring, and wishing you lots of luck with that and making that happen. So thank you so much for being with us. And that was Sandra Gruy.
Thank you.
And another great show has come to an end. And don't worry, we will be back next week, Monday, 2 to 3, as we do. And that will be our final session for our final show for the year. And the one after would be the year after, as we are going towards the end of our Jewish year and the calendar. So we have one more that will be definitely very special. Stay tuned to know. If you want to know ahead of time and be informed who's going to be on this group, on this show, just send a WhatsApp to the SMS to 34519 or Telegram 061-895-1019, and you'll be able to be on the group, that you will know ahead of time who to listen for and what to prepare and how to be in tune with the show. In the meantime, stay safe. Stay strong and enlighten your life and family and community, and we will talk next week.